ॐ सहना भवतु सहनो भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः. May Brahman protect us. May he nourish us. May we work together with great energy. May love and harmony dwell among us. Om, peace, peace, peace. Let us sit for a few minutes and meditate on the spirit within.
Om. Shanti, shanti, shantihi, hari om.
The idea for this talk, Crossing Over Fear, came from something I read, and it stuck in my mind. Everything you've ever wanted is sitting on the other side of fear. This makes you stop and think. Is this true? How is fear hemming us in? I'm using the editorial we here, but I took it personally, of course. We had to get where we are today by going over our fears. The first time we fell down as toddlers and actually felt pain, we learned that doing something new was risky. But I've never heard of a toddler who refuse to walk and run because they fall down. We grow up doing new stuff all the time. Going to school the first time, I remember I came back after being jostled on the school bus, and I told my mother I wasn't going back. You can imagine how that went over. Our parents and society in general keep pushing us to expand our experiences. Our fears are not recognized as legitimate by the people who've already gone through school and summer camp and swimming and riding bikes. They know the payoff is worth the risk and then some. But when we finally get autonomy and can set our own goals and take our own risks, then our personal fears begin to have an impact on our lives a lot more. Everyone has short-term and long-term goals, but some of them just linger in the background. These goals are using up psychic energy without producing anything useful from that energy expenditure. Why are they lingering in the background? Why don't we act on them, start taking steps to move toward them, or just abandon them altogether? Maybe there's not enough time to get involved in them right now, or maybe they're waiting until we get the money we need for them. But maybe they're waiting because they're surrounded by a force field of fear. We don't really want to look at them head on. We can't meet their eyes, as it were. They require something of us that we're not ready to give. Everything you've ever wanted is sitting on the other side of fear. Yes, we want those things, but there's a trade-off. That's what it means to risk. All the cliches about fortune favors the bold or nothing ventured, nothing gained, state the facts of our human experience. We have to climb into our Polynesian double-hulled canoes, set off into the vast expanse, and find the next island. Relying on the tradition and expertise of our elders. Our elders have done this and lived to tell the tale, and they are totally willing to give us help. What are these wants on the other side of fear? They can cover a huge range of endless wants and goals human beings aspire to. It can be something a little silly, like wanting to be able to ignore the presence of spiders. You know who you are. Or some things a lot more important, like wanting a better job, asking for a raise in a current job, meeting someone you'd like to get to know, applying to a school you feel is out of your league, or training for an athletic event or a musical performance. There are two different but related kinds of fear. Fear of missing out on something, or fear of losing what we have. If we just sit and vegetate, we won't make any progress toward the job, or friendship, or education, or creative expression. It's comfortable to just sit and vegetate. Why walk on a narrow, unknown path when we're pretty much all right where we are? Why jeopardize our bearable situation for the danger of the unknown? On the other hand, the opposite of fear is curiosity. What might life be like if we venture out of our customary groove? There's a danger of not making a move. Staying in one place is boring. Everyone we know may move ahead, and we'd be left right here. Or what we have right now might become obsolete, and we'll lose ground. Or we may lose the capacities, physical and mental, to do what we're currently doing, and need another avenue of contributing. Because contributing is the only way to stay fresh, or to stay a participant in the advance of society. These are all rather mundane fears, but they represent our predicament. We are controlled by fear in small or big ways. We're afraid of losing what we have. Youth, our looks, friends, family, possessions, reputation. Swamiji's famous statement, "Renunciation alone is fearless," comes from Bhartri Hari's famous Vairagya Satakam. This is the verse he was making reference to. In enjoyment is the fear of illness. In social status, the fear of losing it. In wealth, the fear of tyrants. In honor, the fear of humiliation. In strength, the fear of enemies. In beauty, the fear of old age. In knowledge, the fear of defeat. In virtue, the fear of scandal. In the body, the fear of death. All the things of the world pertaining to human beings are attended with fear. Renunciation alone is fearlessness. Renunciation is a difficult word. We don't like it when we hear it. It's associated with deprivation, hunger, all negative ideas. The Sanskrit word is vairagya, and it means losing interest in something, which is why that something is left behind. Renunciation means we stop paying attention to something when something more interesting catches our attention. So what does renunciation mean in this context? Does it mean leaving everything behind and going off to the mountains to meditate and beg our food? I think the renunciation mentioned here refers to seeing both sides of all these standard assets: enjoyment, social status, wealth, honor, and all the rest in Bhartri Hari's poem. We see not only the upside, but the downside. Bhartri Hari is pointing out the downside. When we look clearly at the nature of the world we live in, instead of accepting what the majority of people say, the downside is right there. One teacher points out that if we got to a place where we had everything just perfect, our body, the health is so good that we forget we even have a body, check. Friends, our friends are reliable and nearby, check. Job, our job is fulfilling and pays enough, check. Family, our family is harmonious, the kids are doing fine, check. House, our house is in good shape, check. The car always runs, check. Pets are well behaved, check. We get good sleep, and on and on. Any change whatsoever will be a falling off from that perfect state. And when have we ever known anything to stay the same? We mysteriously expect the good things to stay the same and the bad things to go away or diminish. They lived happily ever after is the signature line of fairy tales, at least fairy tales in Western culture. Indian folk tales are not so much based on wishful thinking. The story of Cinderella, for example, ends with this line, "Cinderella and the prince lived happily ever after." Now imagine Cinderella and the prince a few years into ever after. Their kids are now teenagers, and Cinderella tries to tell her daughters about the glass slipper. Just picture that. Children's illusions, fairy tale illusions, are what we renounce or lose interest in. We only have to take off the rose-colored glasses and look around. When we notice the flaws in all these standard good things, we're not so fearful of losing them. They're going to go away no matter what. If we live a long life, one of the good things, our friends and family and looks and renown and enjoyments and strength will all slowly go away. What to speak of pets and cars and houses? We can't hold on to them. Fear of losing them is a waste of energy. The state of everything constantly changing has a good side too. It moves us past griefs and troubles and gives us motivation to establish ourselves in something that doesn't change. Swami Vivekananda used the temporariness of everything as a feature, not a bug. Swamiji said, "Again and again in this embodied existence, you will be tossed on the waves of happiness and misery, prosperity and adversity, but know them all to be of momentary duration. Never care for them. I am the birthless, the deathless Atman, whose nature is intelligence and bliss. I am the ever-free being, untouched by anything. Implant this idea firmly in your heart. Lose yourself in it. If once you can become one with this truth, then in your hour of tribulation, it will rise in your mind by itself. Be fearless, fearless. Proclaim the glory of the Atman, existent in the heart of man, and impart fearlessness to all." From fear to fearlessness is not one simple step, but a series of insights. We need to move from a childish fear of monsters under the bed or in the closet, which are primitive fears, to being afraid of what other people will think of us, a fear of rejection, to being afraid of wasting our potential, a fear of meaninglessness. One type of fear is grown out of, and we grow into a more sophisticated set. But it doesn't become fearlessness. In fact, the more sophisticated fears are harder to get rid of. The root cause of fear is the sense of separation. I'm here, and something or someone else is there. Am I safe? The scriptures call this primal ignorance, but we all think, no, it's just common sense. Of course we're separate from anyone else. Otherwise, we would experience everything that everyone else is experiencing all the time, and we don't. Our Vedanta teachers say that this common sense turns out to be ignorance of the truth about ourselves. Just as we wake up from a dream and recognize that all the dream happenings were just our own mind spinning a story, so they tell us, one day we will wake up from the waking state, what we think is the real world, and find that our real self encompasses all. We do not have to fear our own self. Swami Turiyananda says, it is this dual consciousness which is at the root of all evils. With the destruction of duality, all fear departs. And Swami Ramakrishnananda wrote this 100 years ago. Aloneness means singleness. When there are two, there's always fear. We think we need a companion to protect us. If we have to go out on a dark night, or if we have to enter a dark house, we want another person with us. We say, "Let Gopala come. I don't like to go alone." In reality, fearlessness exists only when we are alone. When we are alone, we can dance and sing or make faces, do whatever we like. But let a friend come, and at once we begin to be careful about what we do. There comes a sense of constraint. We grow self-conscious. Fear exists where there is duality. Fearlessness exists when there is only one. Since we cannot be happy so long as we fear, we shall not be able to find peace until we can say, "I am alone, I need nothing." Well, we're all Vedantins, and we're always hearing that the solution is to know our real nature as non-dual. But even the very elements in the universe have great fear. In the Katha Upanishad, the god Yama says, "He is a great terror, like the raised thunderbolt. Those who know this become immortal. From fear of him, the fire burns. For fear of him, shines the sun. For fear of him, do Indra, Vayu, and Death, the fifth, proceed with their respective functions." So even if Indra, Vayu, and Death are afraid, how can we puny individuals confront this fear? In the Bhagavad Gita, Sri Krishna says, "Even a little of this dharma protects one from great fear." This dharma means this philosophy brought out in the Gita, the philosophy that, through character development, we will discover our real self and attain union with God, which is the Supreme Self, the real nature of ourselves. Commenting on this verse of the Gita, Swami Ranganathananda says, "Then comes a tremendous assurance. Even a little of this philosophy will save us from great fear. Character development is not just a matter of one day. You go on doing it. Slowly build up a great character, a strong character. It takes time. And so, cumulatively, you are building up a wonderful character with tremendous humanist resources. Whatever you have done before leaving off remains yours. You come back and start from where you left off. This development of character has one wonderful quality. It makes you strong. It makes you fearless. It makes you compassionate. It makes you feel one with all. Therefore, even a little of this dharma will save us from great fear." The Gita's teaching is, even a little is better than nothing. It is not all or nothing. Sri Krishna says to one and all, "Take from my teachings as much as you can. Build up your own life and character as much as you can. Don't depress yourself with the thought, 'Oh, that person has done so much. I don't have that strength. I won't do anything.' That is not a correct attitude. That person has done according to their strength. You do according to your strength. Step by step, inch by inch, build up a great character and personality by handling this psychophysical energy system that is within you. Out of your psychic energy system, you are going to produce a remarkable product, namely buddhi. Buddhi, the discriminative faculty, a luminous point within the human sensory and psychic system, that is to be developed out of the same psychic energy system. It is a tremendous psychic chemistry we do within the human system. We convert the whole body into a laboratory. There we are slowly evolving this buddhi. Buddhi is your intelligence, discriminative faculty, your will, and all emotions, mixed with it in a beautiful harmony. It is the greatest instrument of human development. Reason, imagination, and will are integrated in it. Buddhi is essentially reason, but not dry intellectual reason. Reason which has been reinforced by emotions, by feeling. All motivation comes from emotion and feeling, not from intellect. Then great things will come for oneself as well as for others. That is the nature of this teaching. As much as you take, this is good for you. This way of conquering fear is the way of vichara, reasoning, or self-inquiry. It is a form of jnana yoga, the path of reason. While this method is robust and always available, what can we do when we're not feeling robust, when we're feeling vulnerable or desolate? Another way is needed, and that is the way, also brought out in the Gita and other scriptures, of taking refuge in God. Although it is no less effective, it draws on our natural need for companionship. That is, it's not a solo path. This is the path of bhakti, in which we rely on the grace and guidance of divine providence, the grace and mercy of the sages and teachers who have gone before, and on our Ishta Devata to give us reassurance and protection. Sri Ramakrishna's direct disciples gave this kind of loving advice to their devotees. Swami Shivananda told one visitor, "My daughter, the mind can be absolutely free from fear if it thinks about God." And Swami Turiyananda said, "As long as we remain true to the mother, there is no fear that anything will go wrong. But the moment we forget her, there will be great danger. Therefore, I always ask you to think of the mother." Swami Vijnananda said, "For the sake of the devotees, the mother comes with 10 arms and says, 'Shed your fears. You have made me your sole refuge, and I am therefore protecting you with 10 arms. Death will be powerless to come anywhere near you. It is for you that I hold a sword." Many of our teachers speak of the Divine Mother as our protector. The word Durga means invincible. The Divine Mother is all the power in the universe, and nothing can stand before her. In the Devi Mahatmyam, also known as the Chandi, the goddess Durga says, "And those also who shall listen with devotion to this sublime poem on my greatness on the 8th, the 14th, and on the 9th days of the fortnight with concentrated mind, to them nothing wrong shall happen, nor calamities that arise from wrongdoings, nor poverty, and never separation from beloved ones. They shall not experience fear from enemies or from robbers and kings, or from weapon, fire, and flood. One who is lost in a lonesome spot in a forest, or is surrounded by forest fire, or who is surrounded by robbers in a desolate spot, or who is captured by enemies, or who is pursued by a lion or tiger or by wild elephants in the forest, or who, under the orders of a wrathful king, is sentenced to death, or who has been imprisoned, or who is tossed about in their boat by a tempest in the vast sea, or who is in the most terrible battle under shower of weapons, or who is amidst all kinds of dreadful troubles, or who is afflicted with pain, such a one, on remembering this story of mine, is saved from their strait. Through my power, lions, robbers, enemies, flee from a distance from those who remember this story of mine." Being saved from disaster while remembering the mother, while surrounded by fire, literally happened to one of Holy Mother's disciples. The account was in the Seattle magazine, Global Vedanta. This is a shortened version of Swami Bhaskarananda's article, A Miracle in Shillong. The Swami was working at Belur Mutt headquarters in the early 50s. A middle-aged man came to see him with an account of his father named Panchanan Brahmachari, who was a disciple of Holy Mother. This is the story he heard from the man. The event took place in 1912 while Holy Mother was still alive and living in Bengal. My father was a teacher in Shillong. The man then relates how during that period, Shillong became emptied out because the British shifted the capital of Assam from Shillong to Dhaka. The local tribal boys started vandalizing the empty houses, even setting some of them on fire. One day, the man's father, the devotee, had hired three laborers to do some work on his house. He noticed that the house down the street, belonging to a friend of his, empty like so many others, was ablaze. The house was burning during the time of day that the city authorities cut the water supply. So the man's account says, asking two of the laborers to follow him, my father ran toward the burning house carrying a bucket of water that he had found in a neighbor's house. When he got to the burning house, he handed the bucket to one of the laborers and climbed up onto the thatched roof of the building. He then asked the laborer to lift the bucket up so that he could grab its handle and bring it up onto the roof. By the time he got the bucket, most of the water had spilled. Meanwhile, the fire surrounded my father with 20-foot flames. He realized that his death was near. Therefore, with all his heart and soul, he started praying to his guru, the Holy Mother, Sri Sarada Devi. Then he saw an extraordinary sight. He saw the Holy Mother, Sarada Devi, appear before him. She came flying through the sky with her body dazzling like lightning and her eyes radiating superhuman compassion. With raised arms, she said to him, "Don't be afraid, my child. I'm here." Waving her arms around, she instantly neutralized the burning power of the flames, and my father no longer felt the heat. Then for about 3 hours, my father lost outer consciousness. After regaining consciousness, he noticed that the adjacent building had already burned down to ashes, but the house he was on didn't show any sign of fire damage. Not a single straw on its roof had been burnt. When he sat up on the roof, the two laborers said with amazement, "Sir, are you still alive? When we saw you being engulfed by the flames, we heard you screaming, 'Mother, Mother!' After that, we couldn't hear anything. That's why we thought that you must have died." The laborers helped my father come down from the roof. They noticed that only my father's face showed signs of burns, and it had already developed a few blisters. It was strange that no other part of his body had been burnt. The skin of his face turned reddish at first and gradually started becoming black. After a few days, his face became so dark that even those who had known my father for years couldn't recognize him anymore. The devotee's doctor friend told him that the burnt skin would peel off and he would look like a person with leukoderma. This kind of worried the devotee. One morning around 3 a.m., he had another vision of the Holy Mother. She said to him, "My child, you become upset over your burnt face. Just tell me once that you want to be healed. Then I'll make your face all right." My father said, "Mother, I can't say this to you. What shall I do with external beauty? If at all I have to ask for any boon from you, I have many better things to ask for." At this, the mother beamed a heavenly smile and with great compassion said, "My child, if you aren't going to tell me, then I'm telling you that your face will be completely healed as soon as you will take a bath in the nearby spring on the last day of the Bengali year. which is in mid-April. So saying, the Holy Mother disappeared. A boarder in the devotee's house asked him about his face and whether he was going to do anything about it. The devotee told him what the Holy Mother had said to him in his second vision. By word of mouth, that story gradually spread to others as well. One of them was a senior member of the Brahmo Samaj. All of them heard the story with utter disbelief and made no secret of that to my father. As the last day of the Bengali year approached, my father grew very nervous, thinking that if the miracle promised by the Holy Mother didn't happen, it would draw a lot of ridicule from others. He himself wouldn't mind being ridiculed, but the thought that people might ridicule the Holy Mother made him feel extremely miserable. Therefore, he resolved not to go and take the bath in the spring. Nevertheless, on the last day of the Bengali year, in spite of his reluctance, he arrived at the spring as though driven by a superior power beyond his control. He took his bath in the spring and quickly returned home. Meanwhile, two of his acquaintances had come to his home and were anxiously waiting to see if the prophecy of the Holy Mother had been fulfilled. When they looked at my father's face, they were wonderstruck to see that there were no signs of burns whatsoever on his face. This is the miracle that happened to my father. This miracle in Shillong was thoroughly investigated and declared authentic by the Swamis of the Ramakrishna Order. So this devotee actually lived out the promise that Divine Mother made in the Chandi. One who is surrounded by forest fire, who is amidst all kinds of dreadful troubles, such a one, on remembering this story of mine, is saved from their strait. The power of the divine will save us from earthly distress, and ultimately will save us from death and rebirth. Only the final realization of the glory of the Atman, as Swamiji puts it, will put our fears to an end. And for the final realization, we are still reliant on the will of the Divine Mother. A story of Holy Mother and Swami Brahmananda bears this out. Master Mahashai, whom we know as M, the author of the Gospel, witnessed and reported this interaction that happened in Varanasi. At one point, both Holy Mother and Swami Brahmananda were in the holy city. One morning, as Swami Brahmananda came to the mother's place, Golat Ma saw him from the upper veranda and asked, "Rakhal, mother asks you why Shakti, that is divine energy conceived of as a woman, is worshipped first, that is before the male aspect." Swami Brahmananda replied, "It is because mother has in her keeping the key to the knowledge of Brahman. There is no other way unless mother, out of compassion, unlocks the door with the key." And he sang this song, "O mind, remain immersed in meditation on the feet of Shiva's wife. Remain immersed and escape the sufferings of life. All these three worlds are vain, and in vain you roam about. Meditate within you on the energy that's none other than Brahman. This is Kamala Kanta's message. Sing the glory of Mother Kali. Life becomes a river of bliss. Paddle on it slowly." As the song proceeded, he fell into ecstasy and danced merrily, and at the end cried out and dashed away. The mother enjoyed his dance and ecstasy from above. And below, Master Mahashai and a few other devotees witnessed this and felt stirred to the depths by it all. Ultimately, why do we want to cross over fear? Jobs and relationships and academic degrees are all valuable, but in the whole life picture, we need to cross over fear to realize our inner truth. Asserting our real nature lessens fear at all stages of life and on all levels, and asserting our real nature will reinforce our spiritual convictions. Fear of change and fear of death will help motivate us to put on more effort. Our spiritual struggle is the essential need. Using our powers of reasoning and calling on God for assurance will speed up this evolution from a primitive child mind that fears small things to a mature mind that knows that even death is afraid of our real nature. As Yama said in the Katha Upanishad, from fear of him, death proceeds with its respective function. From fear of him, that is to say, Brahman, our real nature, even death trembles.
Om Maduvatartayate Matuksharanti Sindhavaha Madhvir Nasantoshatihi Madhunaktamutoshasi Madhumat Partivagam Rajaha Madhudyorastuna Pita Madhumano Vanaspatir Madhumagam Astu Suryaha Madhvir Gavo Bhavantunaha Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi.
May the winds blow sweetness. May the waters carry sweetness. May the herbs bring us sweetness. Sweet be our nights and dawning days. Sweet be the heavens and the dust of the earth. Sweet be the trees and the beasts of the field. May sweetness come to us from every direction. Om, peace, peace, peace.